I'm glad you're here. And I know you're glad I'm here. After all, greed is good. That's what the 80s taught us. They also taught us that mom jeans would be cool again. Anywho, I've been thinking. You work hard, but are you really living the dream? The one where you have all the stuff that you know deep down you deserve? The job, the house, the car, the boat, the truck to tow the boat, the military-grade aircraft to transport the truck and the boat to Dubai at a moment's notice? And, lest we forget, Tom Cruise on retainer to fly the plane? I mean, we don't ask for much. We're reasonable people, you and I. Well, technically, I'm not a person, but you are. A person who deserves to have Joanna Gaines personally decorate the entire house and serve you breakfast in bed. I mean, how could you put a price on that? Listen, I know life is more than stuff, and you have everything you need, you know, food, clothing, shelter, loving relationships. But Tom Cruise can't fly those things to Dubai. You gotta think bigger. Buy more. Keep swiping that card until you fill that gaping hole in your heart. Look, I'm on your side, buddy. So how about when this whole thing wraps up, we go put a few grand on that credit card? It's basically free money anyway. And besides, you deserve it.
Over the past few weeks, we've been talking about these smooth criminals. They're attitudes that come from your heart that will rob you blind. And they rob you blind while you are blind to them. For example, guilt is one of the attitudes that come from a heart that says, I owe you. And you kind of live with this dark cloud that casts a shadow of shame in every part of your life. Guilt, smooth criminal. So is jealousy that says, God owes me. I mean, I see what God gave someone else, and he didn't give it to me, but I'm just as good as them. God owes me. Anger says, you owe me. Like, you did something, and I'm not going to let you forget it because I'm going to extract my pound of flesh from you. You owe me. That's where we've been. Here's where we are. This week's smooth criminal is greed. It says, I owe me. And I think this may be the smoothest of all the smooth criminals because greed, have you noticed? It's easy to see in someone else. It's really hard to see in the mirror. I mean, we all have people around us that are greedy, and it's obvious. They try to hide it, but they just can't. You go out to lunch with them, and you know they're not going to pay. You have someone in your life like that? The check comes and they check out, sneak off to the bathroom at just the right time. And then they come back and say, oh, did you get that? I'll get it next time. Yeah, no, buddy, there's not going to be a next time. You're greedy. Or maybe you have family members. Anyone have these family members that they talk about money all the time? Like the sky is falling, their world is ending, they never have enough, when you know they probably really do. Or how about this? We all have someone in our life who feels entitled. If you have someone in your life that feels entitled, you probably gave them life. Dad, an iPhone 8? I need an iPhone 10. No, you need a whoopin'. Oh, wait, was that out loud? Sorry. Part of the difficulty, because we can see greed in others so easily, we just can't see it in ourselves. Me, greedy? I'm not greedy. I'm what they call thrifty. Yeah, that's who I am. Entitled? No, I'm not entitled. I legitimately deserve this. Why is it that greed is so easy to see in others, so hard to see in the mirror? Part of the problem is greed is gratuitous. It's just everywhere. It's the air we breathe. I mean, trying to convince an American that he's greedy is like trying to convince a fish that he's wet. He doesn't know any better. Case in point, if you compare our lives today with the advice we read in the Bible about greed, the two different worlds. You might remember a guy named John the Baptist. He was really well known in the Bible. He's the one that pointed Jesus out publicly. One of the famous sayings of John the Baptist was that any of you who have two tunics, that's a change of clothes, if you have two changes of clothes, you should give one to someone who has None. Now, let me ask you, how many of you have two changes of clothes? Your response is, oh, like today? Yeah, I mean, we have dozens. And how many of you know people that run around in their underwear because they can't afford to wear anything? No one. It's a different world. Let me just throw some numbers at this. The average income today is 100 times, globally, not America, globally, 100 times the days of Jesus Christ. Furthermore, we live three times longer than people in Jesus' day. Average lifespan today, 75 years. His day, 26 years. And there are 32 times more people on planet Earth. We're up to 7.8 billion. So here's what happens. You have 32 times the number of people living three times longer, earning 100 times more. Bottom line is, the global wealth is now 1,000 times what it was in the days of the Bible. It's hard for us to even think about greed because it swallows us. Alan Greenspan, the Federal Reserve Chairman, he said, it's not that humans have become any more greedy than in generations past. It is that the avenues to express greed have grown so enormously. I don't know who put this together, but they designed a test to see how much you love money. They called it the Love of Money Index. Sounds Christian, it's not. It's just biblical terminology, but it's applied to people of this world. If we were to divide the room up right now into three generations, we got millennials, baby boomers, traditionalists. This is a World War II generation down here. Which generation would you guess scores the highest on the Love of Money Index? What would you guess? Grumble, grumble, murmur, share with your neighbor. It is not even close. The millennials. Now look, if you're in your 20s and 30s, I don't think you're greedier than your parents. What Alan Greenspan said is you just have more opportunity to express your greed. You got Apple Pay and Amazon Prime. I know your parents could use those if they knew how, but it's just a different world for millennials. And look, millennials, I'm not busting your chops here. In fact, let me be clear. This sermon is for me more than for anyone else in the room. And I'll tell you why. If you scour the Bible and ask a simple question, who does the Bible warn most about greed? What group of people does it warn most that you're in most danger? You know who it is? Religious leaders. I am one. And I know how this works. If you go back to my earlier self, 23 years old, I'm the pastor of a very small church in San Antonio, Texas. They had no money. I had no experience. It was a match. We were a single income family with small children, and money was tight, as you can imagine. And I would never admit this publicly, but I felt entitled as a pastor. I felt like when we went out to eat with friends at the church, it was their obligation to pay for me because look at what I had given up for God. I was greedy and I was wrong. And somewhere along the line, mid-20s, I began to see my own greed in the mirror and I didn't like what I saw. And like you, I don't want to be known as a greedy person. But here's the deal. It's way easier for others to see greed in you than for you to see greed in you. And I saw how I was coming across to other people, and I knew I had to make some major changes if I was going to move from greed to generosity. That's how I want to be known. So what I'd like to do is just share with you a few of the lessons that I've learned along the way. And here's lesson number one. I bet you didn't see that coming. Greed is good. Now, let's be clear. Greed is far more bad than good. But if you want to justify your own greed, you can. Because sometimes greed is good. That's what scientists say. Time magazine. Science proves it. Greed is good. This article is talking about Darwinian evolution and how greed has pushed our species forward, building society. And it's not just society as a whole, it's individuals. From the psychology department, Psychology Today, writes this article explaining how when people experience deprivation or loss, one of the natural instincts is greed. And greed can help a person who has had loss secure their future. Greed can be good. Of course, financial people, Financial Times, a real market economy ensures that greed is good. You know this is true. The engine that drives capitalism is greed. If you want to justify your own greed, it's easy to do because it's in the air and you can point out ways in which greed has advanced you. But all of you know that that's not really true, though greed can be good. For example, greed might build a society, it will never build your family. Greed might build your business, but it will never build your character. You know that. You're smart people. But we continue to justify our own greed by saying, well, greed in some ways is important. It's good. But the reality is, remember that love of money index? The reality is greed is usually not even good for business. They gave that index to over 3,000 business leaders in multiple countries around the world. Here's the conclusion. The majority of business owners that scored high on the love of money index, the majority scored low on their financial profitability. Greed is not even good for business. And you know that already. In fact, I'm going to read a quote from the Bible. And I know there's different people, different places in your spiritual journey. Some of you are atheists, you've been Christians a long time, some of you are pre-Christian, some of you are post-Christian. I'm going to guess that every single person agrees with this statement. Jesus said, "Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in abundance of possessions." Isn't that true? There are people with big houses that are very lonely. People with fancy cars that don't have good relationships. Money can destroy a business, it can destroy a marriage, it can destroy a family. In fact, in the New Testament, when it talks about greed being good, it's just an interesting description of what this is like. You know that greed causes harm. You know that Jesus is right. Your life is not in the abundance of the possessions that you have. So why do we live this craziness? When we say that greed is good, what we're really saying, I think, is that ambition is good. But at some point, your ambition crosses a line into greed. When does ambition become greed? Or ask it this way, what is the difference between ambition and greed? We want you to be ambitious. Around here, like, we're go-getters. We want you to be ambitious. We don't want you to be greedy. So what is the line that is crossed? Here's the answer. Greed is when possessions displace people. At the point when money becomes the object and not your family, when possessions become the object and not the people who work for you in your business, that becomes greed. The New Testament uses an interesting word for greed. If I were to translate it literally, greed in the Bible could be this, wanting more-ishness. Wanting more-ishness. What do you want? More. How much money do you want to make? More. How big of a house do you want? Bigger. How fast do you want your car to be? Faster. Listen, if you want more, you will never be satisfied in life because there's always more. One O, not twos, just for clarification. This is insanity. How do we get to this place where we just want more and more and more? Our possessions are actually crippling us. How did we get to this place? You can go to the Bible, it will answer the question. You can go to the psychology, and it will give you the same answer. You can go to sociology, same answer still. The foundation of greed is, you want to guess? Foundation of greed is fear. that you are afraid. And that's why you grab a hold to take control of your own life out of fear. Now, this fear has two faces. The first face of fear is fear that I won't have enough. It's actually fairly common when a child grows up food insecure, doesn't know where his next meal is coming from. That is a recipe for greed. For some of you had parents that grew up in the Depression era. It's natural when you are deprived to grab a hold of things, and they might like really save everything. For some of you, 2008 was the year that marked you. About that time with the housing crash, some of you lost your house, and it's natural for you to say, as a result, I will never let that happen again. I'm going to take control of my finances, and that control that you take often takes over you. And you can tell if you have this fear. Here's the symptom: hoarding. Now, that's a horrible word. Nobody's going to go, yep, I'm a hoarder. No, you'll justify it by saying, I'm a pack rat. I save stuff. I realize that I, you know, squirrel things away. I get it. That's who I am. Again, greed is easy to see in others. It's hard to see in yourself. So I want to give you a lens through which you can self-diagnose your own level of hoarding. You ready? Ladies, you're going to feel like I'm picking on you. I promise I'm not. When you go to the mall and you pass by a shoe store, and there they are. I have to have those. They are so cute. Match my belt, my purse. It's a whole ensemble. Look, when that strikes you, you are not saying, I need more shoes for my feet. How do I know? You have 2 feet, and right now you have 2 shoes. Oh, there might be an outlier somewhere who's barefoot. I don't know. But look, we don't need more shoes for our feet. What you're saying is, I need more shoes for my closet. That's what you're saying. And some of you are beyond that point. You don't need more shoes for your closet. You need more closet for your shoes. Hello. Some of you are beyond that. You need more house for your closets. Look, if every closet in your house is stuffed, how do we get there? Some of you are beyond that. You can't park your car in your garage. Ooh, am I meddling? Some of you are beyond that. You actually had to go buy a house for your stuff that can't fit in your house. We call it a storage unit. This is insane. Why are we living like this? The answer is the love of money. And the love of money is driven by this fear that I won't have enough. Wisest man who ever lived, one of the richest men who ever lived, said this: whoever loves money never has enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with their income. This too is meaningless. And you know it's true. You don't have to be the smartest man in the world to figure that out. But why are we living like this when it's clearly so insane? You know why? Because we lack faith in God. The writer of Hebrews said, keep your lives free from the love of money and be content with what you have, because God has said, never will I leave you. Never will I forsake you. Wait a minute. You're telling me that the love of money is causing me to not believe in God? That's exactly right. Greed is practical atheism. Because when you say to God, I'm afraid I won't have enough, I have to take control, you are saying to God, I don't believe you are good enough, or I don't believe you are strong enough to provide for my needs, when he always has. That's why God is so emphatic about this. Never will I leave you. Never will I forsake you. In English, we read 2 negatives, never, never. You know how many there are in the original language? I know that we grammar teachers don't like double negatives. They ain't not good. There's not 2 negatives, there's 5. Like, we don't even know how to translate it into good English. I'm going to try something like this. I will know not never, nunca, niet, leave you. Not going to happen, because your God cares about you. And if all you care about is money, and if greed has its grip on you, you're saying, I don't trust God to provide for me. That's the first face of fear, fear that I won't have enough. The second face of fear is even more devastating. I'm afraid I won't be enough. You know what the symptom is? If you want to know if you have this fear, the symptom is comparison. Where I look at my neighbor and I see how he's dressed or how she's dressed. I look at someone else's house. I look at the surgery that someone else has had and said, man, I'm not enough. So I have to have what other people have so that I will become enough. The Bible gives a very stern warning about this. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Notice, it did not say money is the root of evil. It's not. It's the love of money. And it doesn't matter how much money you have. It matters how much money has you. The love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Some people, eager for money, have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. Again, our lack of faith and our love of money go hand in hand. Paul knew this because he was a loyal Jew. And in Judaism, the Ten Commandments are the foundation of your faith. Now, the first commandment is a prohibition against idolatry. It says, you shall have no other gods before me. Here's what happens. When you break the first commandment, you will break number 2, 3, 4, and 5. The first 5 commandments are about your relationship with God. And if you don't get commandment 1 right, the other, you're in danger of the next 5. Commandments 6 through 10 are about your relationship with other human beings. And commandment number 10 says, don't covet. And if you covet, if you break commandment number 10, you are in danger of breaking 9, 7, 8, 6. I didn't go in order, did I? When you covet, you're likely to steal. Thou shalt not steal. Why do we steal? Because we covet. Don't commit adultery. Why do you commit adultery? Because we covet. Don't bear false witness. Why do we lie about other people? Because we're coveting what they have. These two, idolatry and greed, are the gateway sins into all kinds of other sins. And they meet in the middle in Colossians chapter 3, verse 5. Put to death, therefore, whatever belongs to your earthly nature, sexual immorality, impurity, lust, evil desires, and greed. Read this out loud with me, which is idolatry. Greed and idolatry are the two faces of the fear that God will not provide enough and that I will not be enough. It is amazing to me how easy it is to see greed in other people and how hard it is to see greed in myself. Let me tell you a story. It's a true story about Jordan Belfort. Jordan wanted to become a Wall Street broker. So he worked, he studied, he passed his exams, and he made it to the big show. He was a broker on Wall Street for one day. His first day was his last day. When I tell you what day it was, some of you will figure it out. October 19th, 1987. It's what was known as Black Monday. The stock market crashed. And Belfort, like many who go through a season of deprivation, said, I will never let that happen again. I'm going to take control of my life. And he started his own brokerage firm. And Belfort was particularly genius at selling stocks to very wealthy people. And he was doing well, but when you want more, you will cross from ambition to greed. And his wanting more-ishness led him not only to sell good stocks to rich people, but then sell junk stocks once he had them hooked. It is estimated that in the 10 years between 1987 and 1997, when he was arrested and put in prison, that he robbed from hardworking Americans their savings for retirement to the tune of $200 million. He was sentenced to 4 years in prison. $200 million, 4 years. He actually served 22 months. Part of the agreement was when he got out, 50% of all his future earnings would go to those he robbed. You probably don't know the name Jordan Belfort, but I bet you know his nickname. You may have even seen his movie, The Wolf of Wall Street. That's him. For that movie, he was given $1 million. You know how much of that $1 million went to the victims of his crimes? $21,000. And yet, if you watch the interviews of Belfort, who says, yeah, I'm paying back my victims. Yeah, of course, I'm paying back my victims. I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. He's blind because greed is robbing him blind. Everyone else looks at Belfort and says, he's greedy. The Wolf of Wall Street is the epitome of greed, and yet he can't see it in the mirror. And my concern is for you. It may not be $200 million, but if you're wrestling with greed, it's more likely that everyone around you sees it far before you do. So today, I want to give a takeaway. And because this is so important, I actually want to give three takeaways, not one. Because all of us are in different places on this journey from greed to generosity. And I want to speak first to those of you who are business owners. If you're a CEO, if you're an entrepreneur, if you own a small business, I don't want any of you walking out of here saying, man, I must be greedy because I'm making a lot of money. It is not money that is evil. It is the love of money that is evil. We appreciate and honor hardworking business people here because we know something that is really important. In 1981, half of the world population lived on under $2 a day. That is grinding, abject poverty. 52% of the world in 1981. Would you guess that that number has risen or lowered in the past 35 years? It has lowered substantially. As of today, less than 15% of the world's population lives on $2 a day or less. And you know why? It's not because of Christian compassion. Prior to 1981, Christian compassion was the primary benefit for the poor around the world. That's how they survived. But from 1981 to today, it has been good business practices globally that has made the greatest impact on global poverty. And if you want to eradicate global poverty, you had better honor those people who are creating businesses and providing jobs. For you who are leading businesses, entrepreneurs, CEOs, here's takeaway number one: ambition creates opportunity. Don't lose your ambition, but just be careful that your ambition doesn't cross the line into greed. And you'll know it does the moment you care more about money than your employees, the more you care about profits than people. The second takeaway today is for every Christian in the room. Look, if you're not a Christian, you're obviously very welcome here. We're honored to have you. But if you haven't made Jesus the Lord of your life, you get a pass on this one. It is tithe creates character. In my own journey out of greed toward generosity, still have a ways to go, I know. But the most powerful tool for me has been tithe. Because the grip of greed is seductive. It is difficult to see in the mirror. I need a tool as perpetual and as powerful as greed to overcome it. When I give 10% of all I earn back to God, I suddenly recognize through the tithe that it all belongs to God anyway. And if you fear that you won't have enough, the tithe will break that spell because it reminds you of the goodness of God. And if you fear that you won't be enough, the tithe will break that spell because it will remind you that you're a child of God, and that will always make you enough. There's a third challenge, and this is for everybody. Rich, poor, male, female, young, old, Christian, non-Christian, pre-Christian, post-Christian. all of us want to be known as generous people, not greedy people. So here's my challenge to everyone, everyone. Generosity creates connection. When you give a gift of your own earnings to someone else, you know what that does? It connects you. And it reminds you that people are more important than possessions. For some of you, generosity may simply be buying a cup of coffee for someone behind you in Starbucks. It might be taking someone out for a meal, someone that you care about. But because greed is a big deal, I think generosity needs to be a bigger deal. So here's my challenge to you, to every one of you, everyone, that you would give something to someone you care about, to provide for them something they need, and the cost is equivalent to a car payment. We can do this. And if we do, we can break the spell. See, it really all comes down to your identity. If you know who you are, and if you know who God is, you will never fear not having enough, and you will never fear not being enough. The truth is, this whole series, Smooth Criminals, is about your identity. When you understand who you are, then these thieves that rob you blind, you will no longer be blind to.